Hi, there we are, just at a turning point where we're going to look into the DNA arrangement, disarrangement.
If you just go ahead and back up one thought process and then go forward.
Okay, excellently. So, in the story, I just arrived at the point that we have information in the environment, which is basically an electromagnetic field, taken in as perceptions, as described by Hans von Reykjavik, and then coming into the body as energy electromagnetic changes, as described by James Oshman, then taken into the body cell, as described by Bruce Lipton and others, and then, of course, it goes into the DNA. I was just describing that if everything goes right, this is how it happens, but if everything goes wrong, that's how it happens too. Mm-hmm. So at the moment that there's a charge discharge or a chaos or a void around us, that too will be inscribed into the cell, but that condition might cause that the transcription mechanism from outside to inside in the cell, the sensor protein, the portal protein, the linking protein, and the DNA mantle protein, which together form like the recorder system for the DNA, that can be put out of business or reset or discharged or recharged itself. But that means that at some point the added information to the DNA will be dysfunctional because it was a dysfunctional transcription system, or the body was in a dysfunctional state, or the environment was in a dysfunctional state. Well, that basically that's where the experience started. So that causes hiccups in the DNA. And for example, homeopathy describes the experience of what's called a miasma. There were a couple of chronic diseases, which are the counterpart of, say, chronic addiction, which is a state of compensation. An addiction is where people try to live with an unlivable situation, and a disease, a chronic disease, is where people have to live with a situation which is out of balance. And so in the Middle Ages, there were a number of, most of them, sexual diseases. Of course, after so many ages of sexual suppression, there were some problems. And so gonorrhea, syphilis, and a couple of others were rampant in society, tuberculosis, and I have to remember the fourth. But basically, they got into the body and interfered with body functioning. But that led to switching off of some of the body processes. The body processes had to compensate for that. And that led to what's called methylization of the DNA. And René Broekhuizen in the Netherlands has done a lot of work on that. Basically, a part of the DNA was glazed over compared to a landscape in which lightning crashes down and the sand turns into glass. So part of the DNA is actually crippled, incapacitated. The glaze over describes it quite nicely, which means that that part cannot turn on. Mm-hmm. But that also means that as a result of those kind of frozen segments of the information flow, parts of the body sometimes do not know what to do. And so there is a relationship between these glazed over parts of the DNA and the origination of cancer, because those functional processes associated with that kind of memory or that kind of information then don't work too well, and the cells in that area get confused, they start to compensate, they start to fall back on previous states, they start to go into isolation, hibernation, survival mode, which we call cancer. So René Broekhuizen realized that there was a lot of that going on. But with homeopathy, you can actually thaw out these glazed over areas. And then you can put them back in action. You can restore the integrity of the system. It is as if afterward you can repair the damage of the disease. And this is precisely the counterpart of the earlier story that I told about escaping the tiger by climbing into a tree, or falling out of the tree and needing to make a crutch thinking up a crutch so that you can keep on walking. We have the capacity to store information of mishaps so that we can afterwards digest it, sort it out, see the other side of it and come to a solution. Humans, with their language and technology, are very good because they can share each other's information in doing so. Cells do that too.
Not at an early age when our cognitive structures are still forming, we can't figure that stuff out.
Well, I'd rather say we can figure it out very well, but we still have to get used to what our body can do. Because the body has very specific patterns, and it is like you put on a space-time suit or a diver suit to dive into this reality, and you have to get used to that submarine or space machine, spaceship.
Right.
And so once you have learned to translate that, basically the same as the Lipton device, but then for the soul connecting to the body, you can use the body as your instrument to have an experience on Earth.
No, I definitely understand you there. That's just something that's outside of our culture that we have to learn again for ourselves.
Yes. And so that's one of the reasons that I simply describe it at the level of what happens at the cells and cell information processing, cell communication. Because once you are there, then the other stuff will sort of get to you automatically. We're still working on the DNA and the virus in cancers and diseases in general.
Yeah, we could just finish up that area of the conversation by addressing how cancer can be created by viruses.
Well, let me put it in a slightly different perspective.
Okay.
With the understanding that the DNA is affected by our experiences and will function differently and might have to be repaired, for which all the repair mechanisms are in the body and in the cell, by the way. Mm-hmm. But of course, cells can collapse and the DNA can collapse. And in my view, there is a misunderstanding about the role of virus. And for that, I have to go back to Gaston Nassens, as he's called, French, then Canadian. Uh-huh. And he looked at the relationship between microbes, virus, fungus, and something which he discovered under the dark field microscope called a spore, or a somatide.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized that these four life forms can transform into each other. Basically, there is the somatide, which is a point-like organism, very small, minute. It can extend in a way a plant can form a fractal in the form of a fungus, a thread-like structure that's linear. Mm-hmm. But it can also complexify in the same way that the neurons form a neural plexus. Then the fungus can form a virus, which is a little to and fro kind of knot of connectedness at a molecular, semi-molecular level. And then it can be encapsulated in, let's say, a little film of oil and become a bacterium. So he saw that these are actually interchangeable. Depending on the condition, they will go the one way or the other way.
Okay.
But from that perspective, if you see that there is a somatide which can form the fungus, which can form the virus, which can form the microbe, then later the microbe, by combining different kinds of microbes, as described by Lynn Margulis, form the cells as we have them, know them, then basically we can go back and see that there is a relationship between the cells and the microbes, but there's also between the cells and the virus and the fungus and the somatites.
Okay.
So if we look at the cells, then we can see that sometimes there is a cell crash and the cell breaks apart, but then the DNA can also break apart.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we must have in our body is the metabolism of DNA fragments. And I came to that idea because in medical school there was this description of the basin of the Mississippi, where a lot of people who go bathing there get a skin rash. And that is caused by DNA fragments of all of the insects killed by the insecticides up the whole Mississippi Delta. So there's enormous amounts of DNA fragments, and suddenly I realized that if this happens in the world around us, it must also happen in the world within us. So within our body, we must have something that connects up to the recycling of DNA fragments, in the same way that the blood is broken down when it is fragile in the spleen. The skin of the blood is then recycled as the bilirubin, biliverdin, into the liver. There it is used to create bile. There it is used to soap up whatever we eat, so that it can continue in the cycle and be reused again. So, in my view, there is something else going on at the level of the virus, and that virus actually is much more complex and much more computed, much more accounted for in the body than given credit. In the same way that it was said that bacteria were harmful, and now people are actually realizing that if they don't eat the probiotics, they cannot feed the microbes in the gut, which are essential for digesting the food, which we cannot digest ourselves. So there is that strong relationship.
Just going to add, one thing is, two things really quick is, one is, now we know that viruses help, they engage in something that they call horizontal gene transfer. But then the other thing about viruses, of course, is that by continually challenging the cellular structure of our bodies, they're constantly like keeping us to our highest potential at the cellular level, right?
Yeah, and I would like to add to that because there is something else which I ran into, which was when I was reading up on the work of Valerie Hunt, who described the electrophysiology of our body. Like Itzhak Bentov, they realized that there is this direct connection between the psyche and the physiology in this whole electrophysiology as described by Bjorn Nordenstrom and so many others. We need to look at that electromagnetic part of the body and understand that the cells are CPUs. But Valerie Hunt was describing that, and in doing her research, which was basically measuring the electromagnetic muscle changes while somebody was being massaged, she had with her Roselyn Breyer, who was looking at the body from the psychic perspective. As a clairvoyant, she could see the colors changes in the aura. And whenever Roslyn saw the color of red, the discharge of anger in the aura, that's what Valerie Hunt could measure in the muscles, in the Fourier sequence of the muscles, which helped me understand how the neural system transmits information. So there was that connection between the electromagnetic, the light, the aura, and cell functioning, body functioning. But Roslyn also said that there is this relationship between the electromagnetic field and the symbionts. Symbionts are the microorganisms that live within us and around us. So we have microbes living in our gut, digesting all kind of stuff for us. We also have microbes in the skin and all kind of other places in the body, which means that we must have virus there as well. But these symbionts, they live in their region because they need a climate to feed on. But at the moment that the internal body loses coherence, there are traumatic experiences, there are shocks which are stored and not resolved, the digestive system has lost its impulse and momentum as a consequence, then these electromagnetic flows and currents, they lose their bedding, let's call it that. Uh-huh. They start to speed up and slow down, which Bert Vervain described for the physiology. But if you look at the electric level and the photonic level, which is associated with that, then there will be a shift in the wave band that our body operates in. So it will speed up or it slows down. Rosalind Breyer described that is had what she saw is that when it goes too much in the high range, virus can thrive in that. When it goes more into the low range, microbes can live in that. And when it starts to oscillate, both of them can live in that. And basically, that's also what you find in the work of Royal Raymond Rife. He had his super duper microscope, which he learned to make in the Leitz factories in Germany as an endocrinologist, internal medical specialist. And so he was able to look into cancer. He found virus there. He could measure the length of the virus, which length is at the scale of radio wave signals. Right. And then he found the radio signal that corresponds with that, and like Caruso singing the note of the glass, which fell apart from being recognized in its eigenfrequency, Royal Raymond Rife could pop the viruses out of the system, as a result of which the cancers could ungrow. So you then have a coupled system that you have a distorted field in which cells can no longer communicate. This is made extra difficult because in that distorted field, microbes and viruses can grow. But those microbes and viruses, they will, in a way, create their own living environment there. So in a way, they create a niche outside of the normal scape of frequencies and wave bands of the body. And so they will, in a way, slag. They'll be like the herbs growing because soil has changed, or they'll be the dust that accumulates because the sweeping crew doesn't come by. And so then there's the relationship between the virus and the distortion of the cell function. So restore the cell rhythms, restore the electromagnetic rhythms, then the virus will have no landing place, and out it goes.
Right. The virus is, by its nature, it's an autonomous parasite. Is essentially what it is.
Well,
right?
I no longer think that.
No.
I think that that is what it becomes, or that is what it is seen as, in the context of a diseased body. But it took a long time for biologists and specifically medical doctors to realize that bacteria are not harmful, but bacteria are life forms which need a different environment than our body. But if in our body there is a decay of coherence as a result of which microbes can live there, then what would be a healthy microbe in its normal place is a pathogen in our body. But in nature, it would have its normal place and it would have its normal function. But in the body, it actually is doing its normal function, which would probably be cleaning up something which is no longer compatible, no longer computable in the rest of nature. And in nature, we see a lot of organisms which come up to break down or to live off or to transform something which is no longer functional. So we need to compare the healthy state of an organism with the disease state, as a result of which it starts to wobble and squeak and whatever. And then the shift of microbes and viruses, which would normally live in another environment, but which suddenly get the signal, the electromagnetic signal, hey, this is dinner time here, come and get it. And so they start to live off those frequencies which are healthy for them, but basically which are a consequence of a disease within us. So I now look at it that first there is a disease at the information level, which then distorts the regulation, which distorts the physiology, which distorts the anatomy. And
okay,
then
no, I follow you there. That it's an information or energetic imbalance as the primary motivation, and that's where the virus basically comes into that environment and takes advantage of it. But when we look at the behavior of viruses and the mechanisms they have for basically tricking a cell by putting a false protein onto their bodies and getting in there, and all the mechanisms that they have. I mean, these are entities that are designed to take advantage of disease states. It's like I don't know where else they would be living. You know, if the body wasn't diseased or out of balance informationally, energetically, these guys would not really have any business to do, because that's what they require.
Yeah, that is the model which I was taught too, but I no longer go with that.
Okay.
And one of the things is that I don't think that health is the absence of disease, and I don't think that curing is combating a disease. I don't think that we are in a war against disease. I think that disease is simply the consequence of a body running down, because internally the information no longer computes. If the information field is losing coherence, then the body regulation loses coherence, then the body circulation loses coherence, and then the body structure loses coherence. So it is not the fault of the attack of organisms, but it's simply, let's call it, they're opportunistic. They would like to live anywhere where they can happily live their lives, and at that moment, in a confused person, there's precisely that kind of confused energies that they can live off. So I don't think that they do all these sneaky tricks of getting into a system and organizing that. I call it the Florence Nightingale principle. The nurse who in World War I was surrounded by all these people with infectious, contagious diseases, and she never had any of it. If you are healthy within, as the Latins called it, a healthy body, in healthy soul and a healthy body,
right,
then there is no place for other stuff to come in. But differently, all these viruses and microbes, they will grow wherever they can grow.
Yeah.
And if they can grow in our body, they will do so. And if they can sort of interact with the cell in such a way that the cell accommodates for their being there, then that will happen. But I look much
totally
more
agree.
I see it more as a conversation than a war.
I totally agree with that. I see that the potential of the human is the balance, coherency of a state that you stay in balance, and you're so in relationship with the cells that you're able to be able to be aware of what's going on, so that if something, that you're aware of it on the information level,
right,
before it gets into
nothing's going to take advantage.
Now
here's the thing I want to point out, though, is that yes, I totally agree with you that I don't actually look at the virus as an objectively evil entity that lives its life just to kill cells. I agree with you. It's just an opportunistic entity. Like Melissa and I have talked about this one particular microscopic parasite that lives. It's called Toxoplasma gondii, and it lives between the it replicates in the intestines of cats, and then cats poop out this little parasite into their feces, and then mice or rats come around and they eat the cat feces, and then this little parasite gets into the rat's bloodstream. It goes up into the rat's brain. It breaks through the blood-brain barrier, goes into the amygdala, into the specific neurons that control the rat's ability to smell cat urine. And this little parasite knows how to methylate the DNA, change the DNA in the neurons of the rat. So now the rat cannot smell cat urine anymore. And so what the rat will do is it will go walk around in some area where cats hang out, and it will ultimately get eaten And that's how it will find itself back into the intestines of another cat where it can continue its replication cycle. Now, if there weren't any cats or rats around, it would figure out two other organisms to get into. It doesn't care about cats or rats. It's just taking advantage of whatever situation.
I was thinking about that right actually when he was talking about this. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about how it's perfect for keeping the rat population down.
Right. It's true. It does. The parasite serves a greater all kinds of predators and parasites serve a greater purpose of ensuring equilibrium in the ecosystem. Yes, of course. Yeah.
One of the difficulties I had in medical school is precisely at that level which you are addressing now. Who is defining the purpose of things? And I heard professors talk about the purpose of this molecule is, and basically they were imposing their view on what it would be instead of what was actually happening. And a wonderful example was that a female anthropologist at some point looked at the process of sexual conception, and there was this whole story of this battlefield morale of there comes the sperm, it invades the body and it invades the cell, and then it fertilizes the egg and out comes this new human. Yeah. And so this female anthropologist looked at all of that and said, well, basically if you look at what happens, the sperm is sort of launched together with a lunch pack. So along comes the alkaline to neutralize the vaginal acidity. Along comes the glucose to feed the cells, sperm cells, on their journey. But once they're in the mothership of the vagina, the progress and the movement of the sperm, and there are four types of movement, which is basically a spiral, a swimming, a fish-like swimming movement, a flip-flop, and a passivity, a pause. Mm. But all of these motions are orchestrated by the body of the female through the electromagnetic and electrochemical signaling. And so then it turned out that the sperm, instead of being this aggressive mob, it was more like a group of cyclists, one taking the lead and the other taking the lead to make sure that the whole group could get there. And then an embryologist, Jaap van der Wal, showed that at the moment that conception takes place, the sperm is carefully navigated in its proper timing to the egg. And then there is a phase of, say, 4 hours where the sperm actually needs to dance around with the cells, and millions of them are needed because the best attuned sperm is then selected or allowed in because it is most compatible, computable. Mm. And it actually merges, the head of the sperm merges with the skin of the ovum, the egg. And as a result, the DNA can pop in, after which immediately the whole of the surface area of the skin of the ovum, the egg, freezes over. It repolarizes as a result of which the other sperm can no longer connect up. So the most attuned sperm can get in. The DNA is then hyper-compacted and it merges with the hyper-extended DNA in the female. And out of that comes an electromagnetic interaction as a result of which the DNA can capture light. But it turns out that the whole story of this macho male aggressor conqueror rapist philosophy which the medical doctors had was wrong, because basically it's the mothership that guides the sperm in and regulates how it will work. And in the same way, I look at medicine and the medical tradition as a whole and see that there is a problematic situation which has arisen, which I describe as long as doctors need to treat disease to make money, they create diseases and need diseases to have their money. So the addiction to money creates an addiction to patients, which creates the addiction to disease. But that also computes with this notion of having to battle diseases, because if people can cure care for themselves and cure themselves, who needs a doctor? I look at it from the other end. I say the more people can care for themselves and cure themselves, the less doctors are needed for the banal stuff, and the more doctors can understand the real stuff and help where it is really needed.
Well, if you understand that parasitism can also exist in the cultural structure, and that the medical establishment has become a parasitic ecosystem, then it makes sense.
Yes, and in that sense, I've started to look at the banking system or the philosophy of banking as a parasitical belief, a superstition, because, of course, money has no value. It's just scrap metal, scrap paper. So the value that it has is by superstition, which is so well described in the book of Faustus by Robert Marlowe and later by von Goethe. But somehow that superstition can create a mindset in people as a result of which they believe that this is an actuality. And this is where I describe that in us there is this need to actually correlate the world image with the self image. We cannot have a culture which is separate from nature. We cannot have a self image which is separate from understanding others. We need to have both of the pictures at the same time, but a lot of education does not gear for that.
No. Now, I just wanted to say that we're probably maybe we can move towards finishing up within the next 15 minutes with the recording.
I heard your timeline coming in. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And certainly let me know so that we can always do that. And having a 15-minute rollout is nicely pre-announced. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. We could just end the recording right here and just continue the conversation for another 15 minutes, but end the recording right here, because this is kind of a good kind of a place to stop it right there, actually.
Okay, let me then just summarize what I think that we have gone through, and perhaps you two could do that. So essentially, for me, I found a connection point in your music.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful, and I see how this so totally connects up to the project that I'm doing with the Mathemusics, to understand cell communication in terms of vibrations and thus in terms of music, but then also in terms of composition, so that we can actually dissolve locked in traumatic experiences, digest them, and turn them into positive nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, I talked a bit about the Dreamtime Healing project and the techniques of massage, which helped me understand how that's possible. And also talked about the way information is processed into the body and can be stored in the body in case of traumatic experiences for the mind, for the body. But that the purpose of storing information is that it can be regurgitated, rechewed, and digested later on, so that we can learn from that afterward. And that, in a way, that has been the basis of development of the species and the culture. But that we can use that principle to resolve stored traumatic experiences, put it back in the washing machine of the digestive system, sort it out, turn it into usable components, and as a result stabilize and enhance the integrity and the internal organization of the body, so that when the cell communication is disentangled of all these old memories, the debris, the rubbish, the stored trauma, then it can speed up again, as a result of which there will be no slagging for virus or microbes to live off.
Right.
And so what I'm looking for is to actually connect that up to music, which can, in a way, sweep out the trauma in the body and speed up the body processes to the normal state, like a spinning top, which has started to wobble. If you increase the speed again, it becomes very stable and a pivot for the process that we do in living on Earth.
Perfect. Thank
you. So how would it summarize for you?
Oh, well, for me, I think I'm just, I'm just digesting.
I would just say that what it becomes even more clear to me is that this path that we're on of individuation or spiritual alchemy or what we've been doing is basically about the same thing that you're talking about, which is creating coherency, a balanced, more balanced state between us and nature. And what we actually came to a word for it or a term, we call it homobilancia.
Homobilancia, right.
Homobilancia, the balanced human. Mm-hmm. So
it's sort of the... it's sort of the grail the alchemical quest itself. Yes.
Yeah, but basically, I just see it as a coherent, more evolved human, just the stepped up next phase of humanity, which is having more conscious relationship to this whole experience. On these much, much deeper levels that of what you're describing and of all the work that you're doing, it's very illuminating and fascinating and very important, I feel. So thank you very much.
It's also alchemy. Yeah, that's, I mean, you could call yourself very accurately. You could call yourself an alchemist.
Yes. And what you're describing, Melissa, is actually also that the human gets out of the eggshell of the reflex structure of the ego and goes into the interfacing mode, being in the middle of it, being the pivot of it, but at the same time being cosmic.
Right.
And being a catalyst to transform, a creator in creation, which is not based on a self or a self-image, but which needs a self and a self-image to be able to do that well. I was wondering if you would be interested to next Wednesday at this time have a conversation with me and Hank Coy. And Hank Coy is the partner in the conversation on Mathemusics. So that if you would be willing, we could talk a bit about how he and I are trying to explore and describe the way to use music and music notation for the purpose of finding a recipe in the form of a melody for treating diseases and enhancing health.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Wednesday. Well, not as long of a conversation as this, but we can probably tune in for a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my last work day of the week. I work 4 days, and so I'm quite as sharp, but I can be there.
Okay, so then I'll set that up with Hank, and we'll start at the same time as we did now. Let's end the recording for now then, and have a little after the discussion.
Okay.
Thank you. Wonderful. I've much enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Let me just record.
I'll hang up and come back to you.